Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. This podcast is going to be a little different because it's going to be a grab bag of a bunch of different topics with one of our favorite guests so far. So, is he a doctor or man? Man or doctor? Or is he just doctor or man?
That sounds like Ken Milne has been in the house because
Ken says his hello.
That's a surreptitious hello from Ken Milne. Well, thanks for that warm introduction, Chip.
So for like the maybe one or two people out there who don't actually know who you are, can you kind of like introduce yourself a little bit?
Sure. Well, you already said my name in so many forms, but I'm Rob Orman. I'm an emergency physician. I practice in Bend, Oregon, and I guess more germane to this conversation, I run a couple of podcasts. I've been running the ER Cast podcast for just over 7 years, and now I'm the host also of the EM Wrap, Emergency Medicine Reviews and Perspectives podcast, and I've been doing that for about 2 years, but I've been involved with that for about 7 years as well. I don't know, does that pretty much cover it?
I think that covers it. I just want you to know I love ER Cast and I love listening to it, and you had me at rectal foreign body.
You know, that was probably the original line in Jerry Maguire. You know, it wasn't you had me at hello, it's you had me at rectal foreign body. But they, you know, when they wanted to get the proper rating, they had to take that
out.
Yeah,
yeah. So a couple different things we're going to talk about. And one of my favorite more recent posts of yours, and I'm glad you include on ER Cast as well, because I think it's just so important for everyone to listen to, is all about patient satisfaction, but necessarily not when patients are always keeping them happy, but the upset patient protocol. That was just so simple and so straightforward, but I think it's something I used literally last night, the upset patient protocol. I used it even a couple of times because we had long waits and we had people who, you know, wanted something that I can't give them. And I think that upset patient protocol is a really great idea. How'd you come up with that? You came up with that with, like, I think another person. Is that correct?
Well, so that's all Dyke Drummond. He's a guy known as the Happy MD, and you can find him on Twitter. And he's kind of a coach. He's a physician coach. He was a family physician and was just seeing a lot of people burnt out for so many reasons. And this is, of course, one of the reasons that people could find dissatisfaction in their practices. And this is all him. And I saw the upset patient protocol on his website and just interviewed him about it. So I can't claim any credit to creating that. I was just a beneficiary of Dyke's approach to these situations. But getting back to what happened to you last night, so tell, what was the scenario? I mean, don't reveal anything that would violate HIPAA, but what happened and then how did you approach
it? Okay, so I had two different scenarios, and so I'll kind of include both in slightly different ways. The first one, all of a sudden, all these patients come in at once. It's like how it happens, right? So all of a sudden, you know, everyone just decides, I'll come to the ER all at once. And so what happened was, unfortunately, someone's got to be the last patient in line, right? Someone's got to wait to be the one to be seen. And by the time I got to them, we have what's actually called patient liaisons. And this is something that's so clever. And if you want more information about patient liaisons, send me a message, especially in the podcast itself. I'd be happy to explain this a little bit more. But basically, you have patient liaisons. And he came out of the room and patient liaison said, hey, this patient, they've been waiting here for a while. I know. I'm going to get to them in just a minute. Okay, well, I just want you to know they're upset. And they're upset about the wait. I said, I understand. You know, unfortunately, they came here for a lower acuity thing. It was like an ear pain that's been going on for a few days. And I said, it's okay. Like, just let them know I'm going to be coming in there soon. But please try and take care of this. And luckily, with our patient liaisons like this one, I'm very familiar with, we've talked about the upset patient protocol a little bit. So I actually had him start that upset patient protocol. So he went in there and he started to try and smooth things over and calm things down and address their concerns. So by the time I got there, it was a, hey, I'm sorry for your wait. Is it okay if we go ahead? And it went really smoothly. That's the way we want that to work, right, Rob?
That's totally the way you want it to work. Yeah. It's and I think, you know, to do a little spaced repetition, if you've talked about it before, let's just review it for a minute. Kind of what Dyke recommends. He's got several steps. He's got six steps in this upset patient protocol. And the first step is you got to notice the patient's upset and you got to say something, because if you just let them stew in that fomenting anger and their face gets red and you can feel it. You can feel it. You don't even need to have Jedi sense. You don't even have to be a master of the Force to know about people are upset. You just know you're a human being. So that's step one, is you notice the patient's upset and you say, man, you look really upset. That's one. Then the next part is you invite them to talk about it. Tell me, you look really upset. Tell me about it. Then they tell you. And sometimes that's all you need, right? I mean, just letting somebody express their frustration, then they feel validated. You've listened to them. And respond, man, I'm sorry this is happening to you. So sorry. I'm so sorry you had to wait. And you're showing empathy, right? You're showing empathy for their situation. You're apologizing genuinely. I mean, who likes to wait? You feel bad that they've been waiting. Even somebody who comes in with a low acuity issue, it's not their fault that 10 traumas came in before them. And then find out their agenda. This is the fourth step. You can ask them, what would you like me to do to help you? Sometimes it's reasonable. Sometimes it's unreasonable. Usually they just want to be heard. It's not like they can undo their weight. And then the kind of part of that, you know, after they ask you, you've got to see if you're willing to address their concerns. Usually, you know, especially in the emergency department, it's just they want it to be heard. And sometimes like they want to talk to the nurse manager or whatever. Totally fine. And then at the very end, the final step, and it can sound kind of silly, is you thank them for expressing that. Say, hey, that really helps me. Thank you. Thank you very much for expressing that. You know, it helps me realize X, Y, and Z. Those are the six steps to the upset prevention protocol. Sounds like you had that preemptively done before you even encountered them, which is beautiful because then you can spend your time clinically evaluating the patient.
Right. So I guess I need to now mention the second scenario because it didn't go quite as planned. So that time, right. That it happens. And I think that's one of the things we talk about with the upset patient protocol is that not everyone, this is going to work. And sometimes you're going to have to do something different. And that's what happened in the second scenario. Patient comes in later. She's complaining of pain after a fall. And she is here all the time for this type of complaint. Going through her records, she frequently receives narcotics. She's currently on several narcotic type prescriptions. This is someone who we have to be careful about abuse or misuse. And definitely there's a certain degree of dependency there. So that's why we got to be so careful about how we do this. Well, patient comes in. And I understand that they're in pain. I think that's one of the most important things. And I said, well, I did this first couple of steps of the protocol. You see that they're upset and you ask, I see you're upset. What can you tell me about it? And so she said, well, I needed something for pain. And I said, that is perfectly fine. I noticed you have a lot of drug allergies. Can we go through your drug allergies real quick? Well, she explained her drug allergies. And, you know, of course, given the scenario, she's allergic to all NSAIDs, aspirin, everything. You know, basically it's Tylenol or certain types of opiates. And I think you already know the opiates that she wants, even though I don't even have to say their names. But basically, you know, we're talking about the hydromorphone type, or we're talking about the Percocet, stuff like that. I'm looking at her and there's no definite signs of fracture or anything like that. And I said, well, good news for you. We're going to be able to take you right over to X-ray. Why don't we see that? And I can see what I can do about pain management wise. I tried to make that nice little balance there of, okay, let's pick the best option for you. As was kind of clinically suspected, no fractures were seen, but she's having pain. And so what we said is, and I talked with my collaborating physician as well, because we wanted to be on the same page when we address this, is how can we address your pain without necessarily giving you opiates? Because you already have opiates at home. It's probably not appropriate to give you more, but let's talk about this. So in the end, we discussed using conservative type management, you know, ice, elevation, those types of things, rice therapy combined with Tylenol and other things. And that if she wants, she can take her opiates at home, but we're not necessarily going to give her opiates here for a type of contusion and abrasion type issue. I put it like this, you know, obviously there was a lot more to the conversation. That's what became a little bit of a challenge, because that patient satisfaction, you know, sometimes we get these patients that I understand they're in pain and I want to address their pain, but that barrier of how do you necessarily take care of a patient without seeing your press gainies just dip or whatever other quality measure you're using or getting just complaints against it. That's the part that I think, Rob, you have some really great tips on how to deal with that side of it.
Yeah, but you know, I wish I had the answer for this, because you look at the macro picture and, you know, opiates are just such a problem and we're part of the problem. And, you know, we're also victims of the epidemic and we're perpetrators of the epidemic, all of this. And, you know, the patients just want usually to have some pain relief. There's a lot of psychopathology that's laid on top of that. And you have the talk. I mean, you had such a reasonable conversation with that patient. And immediately, I find that when I'm in that scenario, I feel like I'm on the defensive immediately. And that's how I'm talking to somebody, like, okay, I'm on the defensive, and they can feel it. They can feel it. And what I try to do in these situations, exactly as you prescribe, it's somebody who's a high utilizer of the emergency department. I mean, and we're not talking about somebody who you look on the PDMP and they've got, you know, 10 different hospital visits in the past month for opiates. It's like, hey, you know, this is not going to work. You need one prescriber. We're done. But somebody who's got chronic pain, they have an injury. And I think structure the encounter. The first thing is to genuinely care about what's happening to the patient as a person. It sounds so hackneyed to say that, but really I try to think about each patient that I really like them as a person. And you know, most people like have some redeeming qualities. And I'm going to sit down and want to have a genuine conversation. And if that's conveyed, if you know, if you can convey that, you know, I'm really interested in what you have to say and I really want to hear what you have to say, you're 95% there. I mean, if you don't care or you're trying to just fake it, consider your life choices. Consider what you're doing for your job. Now, these are the most trying patients. So, you know, that's kind of a bit of an extreme thing to say. I want to, you know, review what they presented with and what I think is the right option. And then I'm just going to map out what their ED stay is. And oftentimes, they'll just agree. They might say, I don't think I should be treated with, you know, Tylenol or something. I need something stronger. What are you going to give me for pain? And I think you just need to stick to your guns and say, hey, I don't know that more opiates are the answer here. They think it is. That's what their opinion is. And some people, you're just not going to be able to satisfy. Sometimes we'll use acetaminophen. Sometimes we'll use local measures as you did. Sometimes, frankly, if somebody really is in severe pain, I mean, they're experiencing pain, I'll try a low-dose ketamine, and that can often help. Sometimes, maybe a single dose of an opiate, maybe that's helpful, but not, I don't want to prescribe that when they go home and just kind of contribute to the problem. So usually the way that I approach it at the end, is kind of a roundabout answer to this, is that any prescription for pain medication needs to come from their single provider. We all know this. I'm not saying anything magical or mystical, but that, you know, number one, relieves us of the responsibility for it. Like, and not just saying, hey, my hands are washed, but at least the feeling of the responsibility of managing this patient's pain. And if they're having an acute exacerbation and there's no objective finding, oh, we'll try to calm it down right now. But you need to have a single provider who's writing for this. Otherwise, everyone's going to be in a world of hurt, mostly you.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that, because part of what the issue I had last night with this patient was that she didn't find the Tylenol as the answer. You know, I want something else for pain. And I explained the opiate situation. I basically just said exactly what you said. And I stuck with my guns. And I think that's one of the things that is often, and I can't blame people for this. I really can't. And that is the point, that you basically want to comply. You want to keep them happy, but at the same time, giving them narcotics is not always the way to keep them happy. And one of the things I had to keep explaining is that, you know, there are protocols out there. There are systems in place. Like, our hospital has an opiate policy. ACEP has a clinical guideline on opiate use for chronic pain and stuff like that. I do, and try to explain to patients, especially in scenarios like this, that I understand where you're coming from. I do want to help you with your pain, but understand that there are practice guidelines out there, or hospital policies or whatever else, that says that I'm not supposed to be giving you these types of medicines. Now, sometimes they're going to say, and this happened last night, well, the last few times I've been here, they gave it to me.
Oh, man, fighting against that is the hardest thing in medicine, man. The last time. Because yes, your partners will have different practice patterns. And you know, what you're describing right now can make the challenge even harder, because what I picture is you're now in a chess match with your patient, and you are trying to outmaneuver them to the point where you get them in checkmate, and yep, that's the point where you're not getting opiates. And the way that I look at this, do you ever read 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, like Stephen Covey?
I've read bits of it. I can't say the whole thing, but I've got the snippets.
Probably remember from that book, he has, one of his habits is, first seek to understand, then be understood. Seek to understand and then be understood. And in this situation where somebody maybe they're you anticipate they're going to be dissatisfied, or that the ending is something that they might not like. Just hear them out. Hear them out. I want to understand, because a trap that we fall into is you walk in there and before they even start, say, hey, you know, you're not getting any narcotics. And it's just then it's poisoned from the beginning. Actually, I said that to a patient the other day, and it wasn't exactly that way, but I approached it in that way. And he's like, hey, I don't want any, man. I just like want some Toradol. I was like, oh gosh, I felt myself get into that trap. So seeking to understand, shutting up, letting them talk. Now, granted, their story might be total BS. They may be trying to get the medication from you to sell it, whatever, but just hear their story and then be understood and then be done.
And I want to take that statement, you know, basically to understand and then be understood. You can use this outside of these types of scenarios. I actually had a patient not too long ago, you know, they kept making demands and everything else. And I listened and I listened to them closely. I made sure that they knew that I was listening to them, you know, reemphasized and reviewed what they had asked for. And this patient was, you know, had some other things going on with them as well. But basically, they started to cut me off and started to talk to me. And I said, now, I want you to understand, I've spent the time to listen to you. You know I've listened to me because I've reiterated what you said. And you agree with what I've said. So that yes, I understand what you're here for and what you need. But you also need to listen to me so I can explain to you what's going to happen next. And so I think that being understood is a couple of different things. It's understanding the situation and understanding that they need to understand you as well. It's a two-way street. And I think sometimes certain patients, they come in there with some sort of agenda, or at least maybe they don't even think of it as an agenda, but they come in there with some sort of motive that this is what they want. And sometimes we have to be a little more forceful. Okay, I've spent the time to listen to you. We genuinely are on the same page, but you need to understand we're going to come from two different places and we need to find out how we're going to make this work together.
And to that point, one thing I've started doing in the past, I don't know, probably a year or two, is that at the end of the encounter, I'll recap what they said. Like, all right, so you've been having just kind of some generalized belly pain for the past few days, and now it's in this left lower part of your belly, you're vomiting, you're having fever, you're worried that you could have X, I'm thinking it could be this, and here's what we're going to do. Does that sound about right? That's usually how I'll finish it. Does that sound about right? And that lets them know that I'm understanding what they're saying. Also, you know, did I miss anything is a key. But one other thing with this, as we get into this, you know, you want to understand them, then you want to be understood. Is sometimes we get so anchored in that they will understand what we're saying and that this is our idea that we can miss if they're really concerned about something. They might be telling us a clue of, hey, there's something serious here that you're missing. You know, we can just be so sanctimonious or self-righteous in our certainty as to what's going on. They're saying, no, something is wrong. It's like, whoa, I better listen to that.
I think that's a really great point, Rob, because this is something I notice. And the way I personally incorporate this is I do a final recap before I walk out of the room like you just did. But also, because I don't have a scribe at my shop, I don't know if you have a scribe at yours, but my main shop, basically, I walk around with a laptop and I type as I go. And that's so I can get real-time information, feed it right back. And it actually makes for a pretty accurate record in that sense. But one of the things that I do is when I'm talking to them, as soon as I finish documenting their review of systems, I said, now, this is everything you told me. Is there anything else that I haven't asked about or anything else you think is important? And it's amazing. Sometimes they'll throw in things. I'm like, oh, I didn't even think to ask that kind of question. It just didn't come to mind right then. And you'll pick up on things that you could have missed otherwise and could have been clinically important to that scenario. And so I found that to be a useful guide. And then like you said at the end, and I try and keep it open for questions to leave the room, because I've watched this happen too often with my colleagues. They talk to the patient, they say, all right, we're going to run some tests, and they just walk out the door. Don't even explain what to do, anything like that. So when the patient, next thing they're going to CT and they don't know why they're going to CT, that freaks them out. They're getting an EKG, but they don't know why. They think something may be wrong with their heart. You know, is something wrong with my heart? Is something wrong with my heart? Am I having a heart attack? No, this is just a standard part of the protocol. If someone had just talked to them at the beginning and said that being understood, again, goes both ways. And I think that extends beyond, you know, just kind of the basics. This is something that's just good patient care.
Well, we are going deep into the psychology, man. This feels like a therapy session. I'm loving it, Chip. All right. All right. What's next? What do we have next on our agenda?
Hey, everyone. This is Chip Ling. I'm just cutting in here because we have so much information all in one podcast. We need to cut it down just a little bit. And so the second half of this podcast is going to come out next week. Now, I literally just came back from the Simpa 360 conference for 2017. It was spectacular. If I did not catch you this year, hopefully we're going to catch you next year. And we will probably be talking about it some with future podcasts, some of the recordings that we did there and whatnot. So stay tuned for that. But also check out for next week with the second part with Rob Orman. Until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.